All right, welcome back to the Bread and Butter Podcast. My name is Brecklin. I am your host, and today I'm here with a special guest, Nikki Ellis. How are you? Or do you go by Nicole within your business?
Yeah, I go by Nicole, but I've known you since you were tiny, so Nikki is okay.
I know. I feel like we should touch on that for a second, because when I was thinking about having you come on, and obviously we're going to be talking about like fear today and coaching through fear, when I was just thinking back and I was like, hey, I've known Nikki for so long. And one of my earliest memories of you is that when my mom wanted to do something around the house that she was scared of or like not sure that she could do, she would call you. And we always knew that we're like, okay, when Nikki comes over, like they're going to do it. Like they are going to get out the nail guns and they're going to knock down a wall and haul bricks or whatever it was. I can't even remember all the things that you guys did, but it was just the coolest like way to grow up. I just had my mom, who is the super empowered woman, and then you, and just, she had the best friends that were just the best examples. So it's so fun. It's kind of a fun full circle moment to have you on to talk about fear.
Yeah, that's fun. And I definitely am. I'm an action. Let's take some action. Let's go and do it. So I think that's a big part of overcoming fear. So it'll be fun to talk about that today.
Yeah. Yeah. So just kind of before we get into kind of the main meat of the episode, let's talk a little bit about you. Just kind of introduce yourself for anyone who might not know you. How did you grow up? Just a little like brief, who is Nicole?
My name's Nicole Ellis. I grew up in a big family. I'm the oldest of 12 kids, and we always just did tons of adventures growing up. We grew up in the mountains, at the lake, doing adventurous things. And so for me, that's just a normal way of living, to get in, get your hands dirty, get it done. Always just working and serving and experiencing all life has to offer. So that's just kind of how I grew up. I have 6 kids of my own now, 3 adult sons out on their own, 3 teenage daughters at home. And I just, I'm a life coach now. I do my own life coaching business, and I coach dads to create success at home. So it's exciting and I really love it. And I just think everyone can be successful at everything that we want to undertake to do. We just have to go about it in the right way. So that's kind of a little bit about me and what I'm doing right now. But
yeah, no, I love that perspective, that I think anyone can be successful if we take the right approach. And I would love to kind of hear about what role fear has played in your own life, because we obviously all have our own, I don't want to say run-ins, but like experiences with fear that like change us. And I'm so curious what some of yours are that have really kind of changed the way that you see the world.
Yeah. I think that we all experience fear. I think it's a natural reaction to feel fear. And I think that the biggest thing in my life has just learning that I'm okay to feel fear. Like yeah. I can feel fear and be aware that I feel fear and be all right with that. I think that the thing that holds us back from taking risks is not being willing to feel those negative emotions, fear, discomfort, you know, unease, whatever it is, depending on how big of a risk it is. I think that no matter what it is we're trying to do, we have to be willing to feel some negative emotion. And if we're willing to feel negative emotions, then we can accomplish anything. Because really, I feel like discomfort is the price we pay for success. So anything we want to do that's worthwhile or that's going to stretch us or help us get out of our comfort zone requires us to feel uncomfortable at some level. So I think that really that's the key, is being willing to accept that you're going to feel fear and that you can be okay. I think I grew up doing a lot of fearful activities that most people would think would be fearful. Like we go cliff jumping at Lake Powell. We, you know, go rappelling off giant cliffs. We, you know, do all sorts of like river rafting in big rapids. We do a lot of big adventurous kinds of things physically. And I think that has helped me to be able to be more emotionally in control of fear and knowing that it's okay to feel fear and that be able to move through that. So I think I have intentionally, like when raising my kids, tried to expose them to those kinds of same activities, just because learning to not necessarily embrace fear, I guess, but just learning that it's okay to feel the fear is important. I think sometimes people just get scared and then they back up and then they don't follow through. So learning to accept that as a part of the process and anticipating that it's going to happen is key.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's such a human thing to, I mean, we hear this from psychologists, you'll hear it from therapists, like fear has a place in your life, right? Like fear is a survival mechanism. And so I think we have gotten so good at surviving that in some ways I look at my life and a lot of the things that I would like to do that would make me feel like I'm really living and really experiencing life to the fullest, I don't do because I'm afraid. And because in my head, kind of subconsciously, I'm trying to survive. And, you know, that doesn't mean I'm trying to, you know, scavenge for food or, you know, make sure I have a safe place to sleep every night. I'm blessed enough to not worry about those things. But I'm worried about surviving socially or emotionally or, you know, all of these things. And so I think it's so fascinating. Like, what could we do if we could just tap in to learning how to deal with fear? Because like, what could we not do? You know, they say, and it sounds cliche, but you know, everything is on the other side of fear. And I really, really believe that. I would love for you to speak to that a little bit.
Yeah. I love that you brought in about survival because that's what I do a lot in my work is we're moving dads from survival at home to success at home. And I think we're all doing that. We're all trying to move from survival to success. And I think the key is what you're saying, it's all in our brain. Because I like to think that we kind of have two main parts of our brain. We have the natural human primitive brain that is just trying to keep us alive, right? It's just trying to survive one more day. It's trying to look for problems and avoid risks. It's trying to make sure that we stay comfortable and consistent and we don't use a lot of energy. And we want to stay part of the group so that it's that primitive idea of safety. And when we want to, then we have this other part of our brain that is like our cognitive prefrontal cortex part of our brain. I like to think of it as like our spiritual brain. It's like the part of our brain where we can actually make decisions ahead of time, where we can really evaluate. And it's not just a natural response part of our brain. And I think that when we're looking at fear, what happens is our natural, like primitive brain sees danger and it wants to stay doing what is easy and consistent and repeatable that it's been doing for a long time. It doesn't want to change. That takes energy and effort. It doesn't want to put ourselves at any risk. And so it just wants us to stay in autopilot, just keep doing the same thing we've always done, which is kind of that survival mentality. Just keep doing what we've always done. It worked yesterday. It will work tomorrow. We'll just keep doing it. But if we want to move forward and do new things and experience new things, we have to be willing to accept some risk. And that's where we make decisions from that prefrontal cortex part of our brain, where our spiritual brain is saying, no, this risk is worth it. And I think that that's where you start to weigh, you know, the risk versus reward, right? Like, is it really what I want? And in that case, it's worth the discomfort or worth the moving through that fear and not just staying safe away from the fear. And so I think that part of our understanding how the brain works and how its purpose is to keep us alive and to keep us safe. And that's great. But we also just need to use this more advanced part of our brain, the human brain, that's what makes us different from other animals, is that we have that ability to be the watcher of our own mind and say, no, in this case, I want to do something different. I want to make a change.
Yeah. I love the phrase, the watcher of your own mind. I think that's it kind of takes yourself it kind of takes you out of the situation so you can look at it kind of rationally. And I also think, I don't know if you've read the book, You Are Not Your Brain, but they have this concept that like, we do have this primitive part of ourselves and part of our brain that we really don't have to attend to, and it will just run on its own, right? Like, we will keep breathing. We will keep seeking food. We will keep seeking shelter. We want to be part of the group, right? Like that primitive brain. And I think too often we associate our identities with that part of our brain. We're like, well, that's just how I am. Like, that's just what I like. You know, maybe I'm just not meant to do these other things. Like you said, it's working, I'm fine. And, you know, I would love to talk about how you identify or what can maybe trigger you to move more into a place where you're like, okay, I am now willing to take risks. You shared a story with me before we recorded that you actually jumped in to a dangerous situation to save your child. And obviously in that situation, you know, the risk versus reward, you didn't even have to think about it for a second. You immediately switched into your, you know, your prefrontal cortex where you're like, I'll risk my life. I'll do anything to save my kid, right? Like, I'd love for you to speak to that and maybe how we can apply that to other things in our life, like other things that we want, other things that we need, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, great. I think that the first thing we need to start with is, I like that you said that sometimes we think that we are our thoughts and mm-hmm. that's not true. Like I really feel like we are all like divinely miracle. We're divine miracles. You know, like we come, like it's a miracle that we're in the family we're in, that we're living at the moment that we're living, that we're doing the things that we're doing, that we have the talents and abilities that we have. And I think the first place to start is just recognizing that you have something of value. You are of value within you that has nothing to do with what you think or what you actually do in the world, that we have this divine value and that only we can offer that to the world. So if we don't take the risks and we don't put ourselves out there, the world is missing out on us. And we're missing out on seeing what we could become in the world. And so I think recognizing that, you know, you have this divine value within you and that it's your responsibility to share it with the world and that only you can do the things that you can do. Only you are going to have the ideas that you have. Only you are going to be the impact in the world that you can be because no one else can do that for you. So I think that starting out with that, knowing that what you have to offer is important and valuable for your own benefit and for the benefit of everyone in the world is important. And so I think that I have these five, I love these five, I call them the five C's of creation because I like to think that we are creating our own life. We're not just living our life out. Time is like we get a certain amount of time and we're just living it out. I think we need to think of our life as we're creating it. We are creating the life that we want. And so I call them the five C's of creation. And I think it's how we develop confidence and trust in ourselves. And I think those are the key things that we're searching for and developing as we put ourselves out and leave our comfort zone. So the first step is clarity. And I think clarity is just being curious. Like, what is it that you want? What is it that you already are doing that you like? What is your goals and what is it that you want to accomplish in your life? Or what is it that you would like to do that you've never done before? And just getting really good clarity on what it is that you want to try. And I think that it's important here to like set the goal of you want to succeed at that, but you also need to fail a lot of times to succeed at it because you're not good at it yet. You haven't done it already. And so that's this part of your, you know, prefrontal cortex brain telling your primitive brain, we're going to do something different here. You know, like we're going to, and it's going to be okay. Like just talking it through and thinking it ahead of time and anticipating that you're going to have some resistance from your own mind telling you that you couldn't do it or that it's too, you know, it's going to be scary or you don't know how. And just being clear that is going to be a part of the journey. So step one is clarity. And I think sometimes we just stay too long in clarity because we think we need to know more or we need to like take some more baby steps before we get to that or we make excuses. Right. And so I think whenever we're feeling like, and we start saying, I don't know, or yeah, but I feel like those are kind of cop-out phrases that mean you've got the clarity and now you're just kind of dragging your feet. You know, you're just doubting yourself at that point. So whenever I kind of have a rule in my life, like I don't say yeah, but, because yeah, but is a cop out for moving forward. And so I just, when that pops into my mind, I'm like, yeah, I don't know how to do it yet. Or, you know, I'm just going to do it and I'm going to love it, however it works out. And I'm just going to be proud of myself for giving it a try. And so I think once we've created that clarity, that's the step two is courage. And that's really this, you know, 5 seconds of courage that you mentioned, where you have to decide to change. And really, it's a pivotal moment. This is the tipping point moment where you have to decide and tell your prefrontal cortex is going to tell your primitive brain, no, I'm in charge and we're going to do something different. And it's where you're going to move from autopilot to doing something. And it requires a burst of energy and it requires effort. And I like to think of it, we have puppies, you know, the same age as your puppies. And I was thinking about this when I was walking the dogs the other day and thinking sometimes when you like call your dog and they don't just come immediately, they kind of look at you and they're like, I don't know if I really want to come, right? Because I kind of like what I'm doing. It feels comfortable and easy and I'm having fun over here. And that looks like it's a lot of effort to get from here to there, you know? And we started using this phrase, ready, set, go. When I could see he has that little hesitation, I just go, ready, set, go. And he just runs like burst of energy as fast as he can to me. And I think sometimes we need to give ourselves that ready, set, go, like just a time frame of I'm going to act. It's that 5 seconds. It's that here we go. We've made the decision. This is what I want. I'm going to do it. And I have to do it right now or I'm going to start talking myself out of it. And I'm going to go back to thinking in that clarity stage, thinking I need more information. I'm not really sure. And so I think that if we can give ourselves a phrase or just a thought that we use, whether it's 5 seconds or ready, set, go, or whatever it is, that just that little bit of motivation to make a decision, that once we decide, it's just that's all we needed, as we just need to make that decision to get ourselves moving forward. And then just like when my dog comes running to me, I don't just ignore him and just be like, you know, but like, what do? You're like, hey, that was so great. You know, you give lots of praise, you rub them, you like give a lot of reward when they come to you, right? And we have to do that same thing for ourselves. I think we neglect ourselves. And when we've given a lot of courage to do something or make a decision, we need to have our own back. And we need to say, you know, give ourselves that increase of love and compassion because courage doesn't feel good. I like to think that life, you know, needs to be 50-50. We're not trying to be happy all the time. And we don't want to be miserable all the time. We kind of need that 50-50. So if you're requiring yourself to be courageous, which doesn't feel super great, then you also need to give yourself some positive, right? We need to give ourselves some self-recognition and, hey, that, you know, good job deciding that. Or it doesn't have to be big. It can just be a little bit of praise for ourselves, positive self-talk, that do it and love it. Don't do it and judge yourself because it wasn't perfect or it wasn't good enough or whatever. And so I think remembering that you need to keep it 50-50 when you require courage, you got to require some compassion to go with that. So first step was, so I think it's good to just kind of think about like, where am I at in this process? It's a process that we go through and it takes time. So are you still in the clarity stage, just figuring out what you want? Have you figured out what you wanted and you've decided so that you've taken that courage step? Then the next step, and another thing you can do in the courage step too, is we don't have a lot of trust in ourselves at this point. So we haven't done it before, so we feel unsure. So another way we can kind of give ourselves that positive boost is to surround ourselves with someone else that we trust. So whether it's a mentor or a parent or a friend or someone else that is kind of a support group for us, like people who are out doing something new they've never done before, it helps tremendously to surround yourself with other people that are either doing the same thing or especially someone that's just a little bit ahead of you even is enough to just keep you going and courageous that they're doing it, I could do it, you know, or they've done it, I could do it. Or I know they're going to support me as I'm moving through this. So giving yourself a support group, a trust support group as you're building trust for yourself, I think is a key thing you can do to give yourself that courage to continue to move forward. So the next step is commitment. And courage becomes just a lot less scary when you have commitment. And I feel like this is just like setting yourself up for success. Like, you know, put it in your calendar. You know, set yourself reminders, just decide ahead of time. This is the, like, I think, I love to think that you should decide things 24 hours ahead of time. Because when you're in the moment, that's when your primitive brain is working. It's like instant gratification, do what's easy, you know, least effort, you know. But if we've decided ahead of time, then we're using that prefrontal cortex part of our brain where we're deciding intentionally to do things. And we're letting like our spiritual mind be in charge. So when we set ourselves up for success and we decide to be committed to what we've decided to do, we want to put into place habits or systems that are going to help us to be successful. And so I think this is sometimes where people take on too many big things at one time, and then we're overcommitted, right? So we want to be committed to just one big thing at a time, one big hard change that we're trying to make at a time so that we can give our full focus and commitment to that thing. And do it like all in. I'm like, I love the phrase to be all in, because if I decide I'm going to do it, if I just do it once a week, it's it's going to take me a long time to move through that courage commitment phase because it's going to feel uncomfortable for a while. But if I can 10 times my effort and do it twice a day this week, I'm going to get lots better at it, lots faster. And so we can kind of shorten that time frame if we can 10x our commitment. So set yourself up a system and put yourself into a big commitment. Be totally focused and all in. And then the next stage is number 4 is consistency. Then we just keep our promise to ourselves. We build trust with ourselves as we keep that commitment. So consistently doing it, whatever it is we've decided to do, and doing it over and over and over again. It doesn't mean that we do it perfect. It just means that we just keep doing it consistently. And then the more we do it consistently, the more we can trust ourselves and believe in ourselves that this is something that we can really do. And that gets us to the final stage of 5, which is confidence. Then we create confidence in ourselves that we can do it. I mean, confidence is just from our thoughts that we believe it, that we believe that it's true, that we believe it's possible for us, and that we've proven to ourselves that we can get that result by following through and creating that success in our own life. So it works not just for them, but it works for me. And I've proven to myself consistently with my commitments that I can do it. And so now I have confidence that I can truly believe in myself in that thing. And then as we've done that and we've gone through that process and we have confidence in doing that now, now it's become part of that primitive brain process. It's become just what we do, right? If you've done it 10 times this week and the next week and the next week, then pretty soon that is the habit that we have, right? That is the thing that it's easy for our brain to do because we've just always been doing it. And so then all of a sudden that goes into that natural process, that human brain part of us that we don't really have to think about it anymore. And then we can think of something else to work on and focus on. And so the process just starts again. So it's clarity, courage, commitment, consistency, confidence. And that's how you build trust in yourself. It's a little at a time. And relying on the trust of others as you're building the trust in yourself. So I think that I've done that in a lot of ways. Go ahead. I was going to say, I think that we all do this in little things and big things. Like it can be little commitments, like I'm getting out of bed on time. You know, like I'm going to get out of bed when I decide I'm going to get out of bed. Or it can be big things that are hard and that we've never done before. So, you know, people lose weight, people do new careers, people decide to get married. Like there's lots of big things that change in our life as life goes on. And the same system works, whether it's small or big thing.
I love just kind of that whole, I think that really just takes you through the whole process. And I mean, if you think about getting really, really good at that, you know, as your confidence grows, as you develop more trust in yourself, I really just think that that should be so encouraging to anyone listening, because what can't you take on? I genuinely think that a lot of us have spent a lot of our time, a lot of life kind of just stuck in automatic, right? Like we're just kind of like in auto, you know, what is it called? Autopilot. We just go and go and go. We don't really have to consciously take anything on. And I think one thing I've been thinking about kind of in my own life is shifting from autopilot to like manual, where you have to just start doing everything yourself. You have to kind of enter like a new phase, a new way of doing things. It is incredibly painful. And I don't think we talk about that enough. I don't think we say enough that courage, like you said, it does not feel good. Courage doesn't feel good. It feels terrible. Like, and I just wish people knew that. I feel like I ran a half marathon like a year ago. And as I was training, I was like, this is going to be the best. You know, the race is going to be fun. The whole thing is just going to be so rewarding. And it was rewarding. But while, like, as I towed the starting line, I did not feel good. I felt horrible. Like, it was genuinely some of like the strongest fear I've ever felt. Like, I don't know if my body can do this. And I had trained, I'd done all the miles I was supposed to, you know, I had built confidence up, but still when it came time to like jump to like, you know, like toe the starting line and be like, okay, now I'm going to go run 13 miles, did not feel good. I guess that would just be my plug to anyone listening is nothing has gone wrong when it feels awful and when you're like, you want to shut down. And so I would love to kind of talk about that, like I'm about to jump feeling, because mm-hmm. I do think that that's where we get the most tripped up. And our first instinct seems to be like, what's gone wrong? What happened? Like, why do I feel like this? You know, I'm courageous. This is not at all like, you know, the montage I just saw in the movie of them being courageous and everything was glorious. Like, it's not like that at all. So how do we get ourselves through those moments where you're just, you want to run, you want to shut down, you are like, what went wrong?
I think identifying that what feelings are is super helpful for that, because feelings are just like vibrations in our body, right? If you were to explain to someone what it feels like to feel nervous, what would you say? Like, physically, how does it feel to be nervous?
Well, for me personally, I feel like I'll get like the butterflies in my stomach. Often I will kind of like hunch myself up to try to kind of make myself feel small or safe. I'm really distracted. I can't focus, probably.
So you like feel this physical, you can identify the physical feeling, and you felt nervous a lot of times in your life, right? And you've survived. And so how is that different from being excited? Like, to me, excited is kind of the same thing. I get butterflies in my stomach. Sometimes I just mm-hmm. feel like you're like, oh, I'm excited. Like, you kind of even make yourself small, like what you said, or you're distracted and you can't really think clearly because you just kind of, it's the same. And I've decided the only difference between excited and nervous is that when you're nervous, you forget to breathe. Mm-hmm. And so if I just feel a little nervous and I just think, well, if I just breathe, I'll just be excited instead. Mm-hmm. And so I think just realizing that it's just a sensation that our body is feeling. Any feeling is just a sensation in our body. And it's nothing that lasts forever. No one feels nervous forever. No one feels afraid forever. No one feels uncomfortable forever. Eventually, the emotion will change as our thoughts change, right? Because I believe our thoughts create our emotions. So as we think about different things, our emotions will change. And so we aren't going to have to endure that physical sensation very long. And it's really not so terrible. It's like mm-hmm. butterflies in your stomach. Is that really so horrible? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you can handle it. You can handle it. So, and I like to think about, well, what will my future self say or think whether I make this choice or not? Like, I think sometimes we're weighing, like, should we do it or not? Mm-hmm. Like, I went skydiving. And you're in the airplane and you're thinking, well, should I do it or not? You know, like, I've already paid the money. I got in the plane. I got up to the height and now it's time to jump out. And am I really going to do it? Right. And I'm going to feel that butterflies in my stomach, nervous feeling. And so I would think, well, what would my future self say if I don't jump? You know, and what will my future self say if I do jump? Mm-hmm. And I think my future self I want to think I always have my back. So even if I choose not to jump, can my future self be really proud that I decided to give it a try and that I got in the plane and that I made it all the way up to the top and like see the progress that I made? That's what I would hope I would do. You know, or is my future self going to be beating me up and wishing I would have done it? Like, you know, so I think that we want to look at how our future self is going to respond and make sure that we are that kind of future self that we want to be. Mm-hmm. But also just like, do I want to be the girl that jumped out? I jumped out and my parachute filled up and I came to the bottom and I did it, you know? And do I want that reward? Either way, we're going to have some discomfort. So which discomfort do you want? If you choose to jump, you're going to have to like move through that fear and make the jump. But then at the bottom, you're going to get to like feel all the pride and joy and excitement of having that experience. Mm-hmm. Or I can have the discomfort of changing my mind, which sometimes is right, right? Sometimes we have to change our mind even at the last minute. It doesn't mean we were wrong to try. It doesn't mean we were wrong to get all the way up into the plane. It just means in that moment, it still wasn't the right moment for us. And that is sometimes my hardest life decisions have been moments like that, where yeah. I felt like I wanted to do something. I decided, I did all the preparation and the training and the practice and I got in the plane and all the way to the jumping out. And then I decided, no, I just don't think it's quite right for me. Or I feel like I really should do something else. And that can still be the totally right decision, but it's still going to require some discomfort, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to require me going, oh, I changed my mind, or it just wasn't right in that moment. A little disappointment. It could be a little disappointment in myself or just disappointment in the situation. And so no matter what choice we're making, there is always a cost. We have to choose one or the other. And so you have to weigh like which cost is worth it to you. think a lot of people that are people pleasers run into this debate a lot, because if you're always doing things for other people, then the cost is whatever you would have chosen, whatever you wanted to do, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes the cost is worth it. Sometimes, well, I didn't really care about that and I'm happy to do that for you. So, you know, you're willing to make that cost. And sometimes it's not worth it. And so the cost is we have to tell the person, sorry, I can't do that. You know, yeah. I've got to do this instead. And so I think if we're evaluating the costs, then, and thinking about it from our future self point of view, like, what is my future self going to think? Like, where do I want to be? Is it going to get me where I want to go? Then I should make that decision, you know? And I think that if we're just staying the same, getting back to our value at the very beginning, if we're just staying in autopilot, then we're not moving to that future self. We're just staying where we are. Mm-hmm. And we're not sharing what we have, and we're not growing and becoming that new future person. We're just content and happy where we are. And I really believe that's where people feel stuck, because a part of us wants to grow and be challenged and do new things. And so when we're just feeling stuck and in a rut, it's because we aren't making any progress and we aren't moving in any direction. We're just on autopilot doing the same things. And so the only way to become something different is to move through that discomfort.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I think one thing that if I could have this podcast do one thing, it would be that I want women, people, everyone, but women especially, to feel like it is good and right and normal for them to want progress and for them to want to grow. And I think it can be extremely easy to kind of apologize for wanting more or wanting to be more or do more or see more or experience more. And I think if we could all be more okay and normalize, like, you know what, while I'm so lucky and so blessed and, you know, all of these wonderful things, I want more and I want to do more. And I think that can be the catalyst to push us into that stage of discomfort that will move the needle, right? Like, that will move our lives and change us. And so, yeah, I would love for you to kind of talk about how you identify or how you kind of normalize or what you would suggest that people do to normalize the fact that they don't feel like life is enough, like they need more. Because I think people get embarrassed about that. And they'll, you know, they'll say things like, oh, well, you know, I don't know why I want this. I'm already have so much, right? Like, I'm already so blessed. Life is already so good. I would just love for you to speak to that.
Yeah, I think that it is so easy to get into complacency and to just be fine with how things are. And I really think that that decision to become more, to do more, is, and to believe in yourself, is the biggest decision that we can make. And we have to keep making it every day, because every day is an opportunity to become something new. And I think that I think we should all be dreaming big. I think we should all be dreaming big. There is enough money and success and happiness in the world for everyone to have as much as they want. And I think that we sometimes pigeonhole ourselves thinking small about what we can accomplish in our life, and that it's never too late to decide to go after something big and new. And I think that that power to decide is like our biggest gift and power in life. Like, no one can decide for you what you believe. No one can decide for you what you want. No one can decide for you what you're willing to go after. You have to make those decisions for yourself. And I think that this power of decision making is the biggest underutilized personal power that we have. I think people just feel like they're stuck and they're at the mercy of their life. Mm-hmm. And that we all have personal power to make decisions every day that improve our situation. We all have power every day to make decisions to do something different than we did yesterday. And I think that we just need to all dream bigger. Like, we all need to just keep believing that we can become something even bigger and better, and that our life can be even more wonderful than it is already.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that it doesn't have to mean that you aren't grateful. I think sometimes, yeah, I often hear kind of this phrase of like, or I'll catch myself saying it. Like, I'll be talking to my husband about a goal that I have or something that I want. And I'll catch myself saying things like, I know that it's already so good. Like, I know that my life is happy, and we just need to like get rid of that. Like, we need to kind of get rid of that. Like, why, why would we ever want to put ourselves in anything but an abundance mindset of like, why not? You know, why couldn't I experience something new? And not that you're not grateful and grounded and happy, but I just think you can continue that happiness just by pushing yourself and by dreaming big. I love that.
Yeah. And actually that gratefulness and happiness that you feel is just a catalyst to receiving more. Mm-hmm. And the more that we go after, the more we have to give to others. Like if you use money, because it's easy to think of, but like the more value I put out into the world, the more, you know, I create in the world that benefits not only myself, but other people, mm-hmm. then the more benefit they get from it and the more they get to grow from it. I mean, like you think about people that invent something and we all pay money to buy it. And so he gets the money because he invented it and it blessed all of our lives. Like we are all benefited by going after more. Everyone benefits.
Yeah. No. Oh, I wish we could just like shout that to the rooftop. So I'm grateful that you brought that up because I just think that's such an important like mentality switch of like, there is enough and we don't have to settle. And it's not greedy or wrong to go after the biggest and the best and the happiest. It's just, it's beautiful. Like, why not? Why not? I just wanted to kind of, before we wrap up, I would love for you to kind of coach through something that I hear a lot. And it's just a common one. And, you know, I think about all of the different things that people my age are facing, or not even my age, everyone is facing. And the one that I came down to, the fear that I came down to the most that we deal with on a consistent basis is, what will they think of me? And so just a really quick little coaching thing. I just think that's something everyone can relate to. Everyone, usually every day for me, at some point is faced with the fear of what will they think of me?
Yeah. So what will you think of me is a thought that you have, right? So what will they think of me? What will they think of you? Like answer that question for yourself. Mm-hmm. I think that would be the step one. Like when you think that thought, what will they think of me? I want you to answer it for yourself. What do you think they might think? You know, what is it that you're worried about? That if that thought is creating worry for you, a feeling of worry, then I think the first step is answering what it is you're worried about. I think as we're looking for that clarity in step one, we want to understand, well, what is it that I'm really afraid of? You know, what is it I'm worried they might think I might do? And maybe I might do that. You might agree. Mm-hmm. You know, they might think that, you know, it was embarrassing, right? That I might feel like it was going to be embarrassing to someone else. Or they might think that I think that I'm better than them. Or they might think that, you know, whatever is your answer, I think answering that set for yourself so you can create awareness for yourself on what it is you're really worried about. Mm-hmm. And then what feeling does that response give you? So like if you asked, you know, what will they think of me? And I thought, I think they might be embarrassed by what I did. Okay, that's mm-hmm. That was the first thing that came to my mind. Maybe someone might feel embarrassed. So they might feel embarrassed. How does that make me feel? I think that we should always be looking at what we are going to think of ourselves. What is our personal experience going to be? Because we can't control how other people think or what other mm-hmm. people feel or what other people do. All that we have control over is what we think and what we feel and the actions we take from those feelings. And so we can't be focusing all of our efforts on trying to figure out what other people are going to do because they get to choose that. But if we can focus our efforts on thinking about what we are going to do, how is it going to affect me? So they might be embarrassed. How would that make me feel? I might feel disappointed that I embarrassed them, right? So if I feel disappointed, then how might I act? Well, if I'm thinking they feel embarrassed and I'm feeling disappointed in myself, then I'm going to be bad talking myself about what I did, right? That's not helpful. So instead, I want to think they might feel embarrassed. Am I embarrassed? I don't feel embarrassed. I feel proud of what I did. Mm-hmm. I feel proud of what I did and I feel good about myself. Then I can move forward and continue to take the actions that are important to me. And I'm not going to worry about the thoughts and feelings of others in the sense that I can't control those. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. I'm not wanting to offend someone on purpose. Okay. And I wouldn't ever do that. So, but if it happens on accident and I realize if I thought, oh, I embarrassed them, then my thought might be compassion. And then I would act, I might feel compassion. So then I would act out of compassion and try to do what I could to make it right for that person. Right. So I think that as we're thinking, when we're worried about asking ourselves questions, like what will they think of me? We should answer those questions for ourselves. And then we should see what feelings those thoughts create for ourselves. And then the actions that we take from those feelings. And we need to remember to stay in our own lane, right? We don't need to worry about what other people's thoughts and feelings and actions are. We need to worry about what we think of ourselves and our actions and what we're doing and stay in our own lane. And then we can create the life that we want. Because if we're trying to create a life for ourselves that makes other people happy, that's people pleasing. And we're never going to be content and happy with that life.
Thank you. And that was just, it was kind of exciting and like invigorating to just kind of like go through those things, because I just think it's so empowering. When you understand your mind and when you work kindly with your mind, I just really believe that sky's the limit. You can do anything if you can manage your mind. So just kind of quick before we wrap up, I would love for you to kind of plug your business, kind of what you're doing right now and where people can find you.
Yeah, great. It's Nicole Ellis Coaching. I coach and empower men who are wanting to create success at life and at home. Most of my clients are really successful in their careers or in their lives already, but they're struggling to find success in their relationships or in their personal lives at home with their family, with kids, with their spouse, or just personal satisfaction with their own life, like what we've been talking about today. So I have a website. It's happinessperspective.com. And there's all sorts of freebies and resources there so that they can meet with me. But I just believe that everyone should be successful in all aspects of their life. And I think that home is a place that we can all work at being more successful with our relationships and in achieving our goals. So
awesome. Thank you. And yeah, everyone definitely go ahead and go check out those resources. Clearly, Nicole knows what she's doing. And I think everyone can benefit from a coach in any phase of your life. If it's an official coach, if it's a coach that you pay, it's just it's a great practice. So as far as all of my listeners, go ahead and rate and review the podcast. Thank you so much for being here for another week. And I will see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.